of whether it's better to use olive oil. Is it better to use a wax candle? Does everyone see that? Everyone was able to get the sheet? Okay. So there's a lot to be said about this, but I want to try to squeeze it into 45 minutes. That's my goal. Our starting point is with the first source on the sheet, the Gemara in Shabbos, which talks about, first, the wicks and oils that are appropriate for Shabbos candles. Why might a wick or oil be inappropriate for Shabbos candles? Let's start from there. Why might I disqualify a fuel for Shabbos candles? Doesn't burn nicely. So why should that disqualify it?
Well, because it might come to tilt the lamp to improve the flame.
Right. So one consideration is the equivalent of what we have today with a dimmer. Meaning, when you talk to people about this, often they're very confused because we don't use oil lamps. So I think a dimmer is a helpful analogy. In the day when people used oil lamps as their source of illumination, if it's not burning well, if the oil is not flowing well towards the wick, so you adjust the bowl, you tilt it a little bit to see if it'll work. That was what they would do. Today, if I have a lamp that has a dimmer and the light's not strong enough, so then I'll fiddle with the dimmer to get it to a setting that I like. So because of that, they said, don't use a fuel for Shabbos candles if it doesn't flow well to the wick, because, again, we're concerned that that you might adjust it. That's one consideration. There are other considerations as well. So the goal of Shabbos candles is supposed to be, and I use the word candle loosely because we do a lot of talking about oil lamps and candles and interspersing the two. But the goal of Shabbos candles fundamentally is to satisfy kavod and oneg for Shabbos. Kavod, honor for Shabbos. It creates a nice dignified atmosphere to have light. And oneg, enjoyment for Shabbos as well, because again, you're able to enjoy your meal, you're not tripping over each other, you can enjoy yourself better. So in the event that you use a fuel that doesn't burn well, the light flickers, or it creates a bad smell, then you've defeated the purpose of your Shabbos candles. So for Shabbos, we have certain restrictions about what you're going to use. And in source number one on the sheet, Rav Huna says, "Psilas u'shmanim sh'amu chachamim ein malikin ben b'Shabbos, ein malikin ben b'Chanukah." That which you're not supposed to use on Shabbos, you don't use on Chanukah either. Bein b'Shabbos, bein b'chol, whether it's Shabbos Chanukah or whether it's Tuesday, doesn't make a difference. Clear? He says, same rules will apply for the menorah. Rav Chisda says, no. He says, Shabbos Chanukah, you shouldn't use them. But why can't you use them on Tuesday of Chanukah? The goal of my menorah is not to illuminate my table where I'm eating. Who cares if it burns poorly? Who cares if it smells? So Rav Chisda says, you're fine. Just don't use it on Shabbos Chanukah. And Rabbi Zeira quotes, we got a string of quotes here, but we end up with Rav, who says, you're allowed to use these even on Shabbos Chanukah for your menorah. No problem at all. Why does Rav say you're allowed to use it even on Shabbos Chanukah? What's his rationale for not worrying about it? Why doesn't he worry you might tilt the bowl, for example? Yeah, because Rav said Haneros Halalu. He knows we're not using the light from the menorah. Since I'm not using the light from the menorah, there's no concern that I'm going to tilt the bowl, so I can use it on Shabbos Chanukah also. Who cares? Doesn't make a difference. Three different views. Rav's view is the one that dominates, and we say you're able to use any fuel that you want for Chanukah. Whether it's Shabbos Chanukah, whether it is during the week, doesn't make any difference. However, take a look at source number two. There's always a however, or this would be a very short shiur. So, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, "Kol hashmanan kulan yafin laner." All oils are good for ner. Note that we don't know right now whether he means Shabbos candles or menorah. But Tosfos in source number three will tell you he means menorah. So he says, all oils are fine. V'shemen zayis men amuvchar. best to use olive oil. He does not say why. Right? He just says olive oil is best. Abaye comes along and he says, still in source number two, originally, I used to go, Rabbah, my mentor, used to go look for sesame seed oil. He thought sesame oil was best because he thought this, the light flows better, longer. But then he heard Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, and he said, I'm going to go looking for olive oil. Why? It has a clearer light. So why would we prefer olive oil at this stage? What's our approach?
Clear light.
Clear light. Correct. That's my preference. That which generates a clear light, which means that if I can get a better light by using not olive oil, but wax candles, maybe I should go with wax candles. Right? Your only issue is clear light. Why not? Sorry?
Are we talking about Shabbos here or Hanukkah?
No, that's what I said. Tosfos says we're talking Hanukkah.
Well, the most obvious conclusion would be because the mace would use olive oil.
He didn't say that at all.
I know. I wonder why.
Ah. The answer is, he doesn't care. Why doesn't he care? We'll come back to that by the end of the shiur, God willing. But it's a good question. He doesn't seem to care at all about mimicking the miracle. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's position is we want to use that which produces the best light. Now, one thing that's really interesting here is that you're not going to see in the Gemara in Shabbos a discussion about candles. Right? We have wax candles. You're not going to see a discussion there about candles. There is a discussion at one point about using shava, about using wax for Shabbos candles, and there's a whole discussion about what they mean by this, but it seems like they were talking about liquid wax, liquefied wax in a bowl, like we use oil as a fuel. Candles did exist back in those days. According to various articles that I read, the ancient Romans made candles by dipping wicks into beef tallow. So they actually were able to get candles. And yet they didn't mention them. So I think the reason they didn't mention them is found in source number 4 from the website candles.org. If you want to know about candles, look at candles.org. I think that's reasonable. Most early Western cultures relied primarily on candles rendered from animal fat, tallow. A major improvement came in the Middle Ages when beeswax candles were introduced in Europe. Unlike animal-based tallow, beeswax burned pure and cleanly without producing a smoky flame. It also emitted a pleasant smell, sweet smell, rather than the foul, acrid odor of tallow. So in other words, the candles that they would have known back then would have been smelly. They would have produced a smoky flame. That's not a candidate for the menorah. That's not a candidate for Shabbos, and that's why they're not mentioning it. Okay, so our first view is use olive oil in order to get a clear flame. Fast forward to the Shulchan Aruch in source number 5. And the Shulchan Aruch there begins by telling us all oils are fine. All wicks are fine for the menorah, for Hanukkah. I don't care if it doesn't draw well to the wick. I don't care if it doesn't make a difference. That's the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo. The Ramah says, however, Shemen Zayis mitzvah min amuvchar, but olive oil is best. And if you don't have olive oil, then he goes on. And I want to come back to the rest of his line, but I'm not there yet. You see the parentheses in source number 5 in the Hebrew? That's where the Ramah gives us his sources, or somebody gave us the Ramah's sources. The Ramah did not necessarily put that in there. And he mentions three figures, the Mordechai, the Kolbo, and the Maharil, all of which are strong, reputable, early Ashkenazi halachic authorities. And I brought them for you in sources 6, 7, and 8. So the Mordechai says that the Maharam would light using olive oil in small metal lamps. That leads to a separate discussion. The reason why he preferred metal lamps is because you're not supposed to use a gross menorah. Show of hands, how many of you still try to use oil by filling the little cup with oil and then putting the wick with the floating thing on top? Anybody here do that? No. What happens when you do that? First of all, as Marvin tries to gesture, right, it sinks in the oil, right? It doesn't work well. You make a mess, fundamentally. And the rule is that you're not allowed to use a messy menorah. You're not allowed to use a ner yashan, a used clay lamp, because it gets gross. Metal you can clean and put out there the next night and it'll be just fine. So the Mordechai says that the Maharam used metal, but he used olive oil specifically. Now there is a note there. Some editor put in a note saying it's actually talking about Shabbos. It's not talking about Hanukkah in general, it's about Shabbos Hanukkah. However, the Rama, who quotes the Mordechai as a basis for using olive oil on Hanukkah in general, clearly doesn't think so. He thinks that it's for each night of Hanukkah. The Maharil as well, in source number 7, says olive oil. Neither the Mordechai nor the Maharil explains why. If you want to know why to use olive oil, you look at the Kolbo in source number 8. What does the Kolbo say is the reason? The miracle was with olive oil. What Rabbi Grossman thought we were going to say before, right? That the issue is that you want to parallel the original nace. You want to parallel the original miracle. That was with olive oil, so we use olive oil. So that's a second approach, right? So far, so good? Interestingly, what that means is that the Mechaber, right, Rabbi Yosef Karo, does not think that you need to mirror the miracle. Because he didn't say that. It's only the Ashkenazim who think you're supposed to use olive oil. Now go back to source number 5 again, please, and we read the rest of the Rama. The Rama writes, "V'im ein shemen zayis matzui." What if you can't find olive oil? Mitzvah bishmanim she'oron zach v'naki. So the mitzvah is to use oils that have a pure and clean light. The Noagim b'medinos elu lahadlik b'ner shel shava. And our practice is to use wax candles, ki oran salul kimo shemen, because their light is pure, it's clear, like that of oil. So he says, if you can't find olive oil, then use oil that burns clear and well. Our practice is to use wax candles, because it produces clear light like oil. Let me ask you, reading that Ramah, okay, the one that the Rama that we just read. Does he prefer wax candles or does he prefer olive oil?
Depends if he can find it.
No, let's say he can find olive oil. What's his preference?
Well, he says olive oil is mitzvah in a mukbar.
Yeah. That's what I would have thought. When I first prepared a shiur on this topic years ago, I heard a shiur from another Rav. And he thought that the Rama was saying, I prefer wax over olive oil. But I don't think that's what the Rama is saying. The Rama is saying the olive oil is best, and in the absence of olive oil, the practice is to use a wax candle. That works really, really well. That's the position of the Rama. The truth of the matter is that the Rama would have had a hard time getting olive oil in 16th century Krakow. If you take a look at sources 9 and 10, I went looking in cooking references for that region from the 16th century and from medieval times in general, and what we find is that olive oil was plentiful in France. Olive oil was plentiful in the areas around the Mediterranean. If you're in Poland, you're not cooking with olive oil. And you're also not burning olive oil. You didn't have it. It wasn't available. So it makes sense that the Rama is saying, when we don't have olive oil, here's what we use. Because it happened that the Rama would not have olive oil readily available. So the Mishnah Brewer supports this view in source number 11, and he says, go with the nace, go with the miracle. So I have two different approaches right now, both of which end up with olive oil for very different reasons. One, it burns clearly. Two, this is what the miracle happened with. Clear so far? No pun intended? Okay. Good. The third approach is the Maharal's approach. And this one is, I have to say, a very, very different kind of idea, which is okay, because he's the Maharal, and he's known for that. That's the set of Sfarim right here behind me. These the red ones, that's the Maharal. and the Maharal can basically say whatever he wants. So that's what he does here. In source number 12, the Maharal says, "Mipnei ki ra'isi devarim shanu noagin v'him tzmuhim elai." He says, "I've seen what people are doing, and it kind of shocks me. Yesh lizkor osam. I should mention these practices that are shocking, so that people will learn not to do them. Ha'echad." So he says, one of these, the first one that I want to mention is, "Masharov olam noagin lasos neros shalshava lahadlikbo." Most people, he says, are making wax candles for lighting. "Chutz min osam hamedaktikim lahadlik b'shemin zayis v'mneishu zecher l'neis shenasa v'beis hamikdash." He says, except for those who are careful to use olive oil because of the miracle. So the Maharal says, I really don't like wax candles. "Ki lefia nerishu pasul ener chanukah legamri." I need to make sure to mention this, because I think wax candles are no good for Chanukah candles. Why? "Delo nikra ner klal." He says, that's not called an ner. "Rak ze nikra ner shenosin hashemen bekli umanichin shem apsila sheze nikra ner." He says, ner by definition is a fuel in a bowl and a wick put into it. Not where there is a solid material wrapped around a wick. And he goes on with a long discussion in which he says, when you light a wax candle, what burns?
Wax.
And?
The wick.
The wick. When you light an oil lamp, what burns?
The oil.
The oil, not the wick. Right? The wick will remain. So he says that tells you, that's an indicator to you that these are actually two different things. And he has this whole excursus on how the neshama is like a ner and Hashem's light is like a candle. He ties it into a rush in Shabbos, but I'm not going there right now. He says, the Maharal says, it's supposed to be like the ner that you had in the miracle. He doesn't particularly care if it's olive oil or not. Rav Moshe Feinstein observed that regarding this Maharal, that he does not seem to care whether it is olive oil or not. He wants oil because he wants the oil lamp structure. So that's approach number three. We've now gone through three approaches. One, olive oil is clear. Two, olive oil was the miracle. And three, oil because it's an oil lamp. That was the miracle. And then the last view. And the last view is one that's going to probably startle some people here if you haven't heard this idea before. Tell me something. Take a look, please, at source number 13 on the sheet. This is the classic Gemara about Hanukkah. My Hanukkah. What is this Hanukkah thing anyway, says the Gemara, after it has spent significant time talking about Hanukkah. What exactly is this Hanukkah thing anyway? Ditanu Rabbanan. The sages taught the following. Bechav hei bekislev yomei de Chanukah t'manya inun. 25th of Kislev starts 8 days of Chanukah. D'lo l'mispeid b'hon, d'lo l'is'anos b'hon, no eulogizing, no fasting. Shek shenichnesu yevanim l'heichol, timu kol ha'shmanim shebeheichol. When the Greeks entered the Beis HaMikdash, they contaminated all of the oil in the Beis HaMikdash. When the Chashmonoim won, they found only one jug of oil with the seal of Kohen Gadol, right? This story is not new to you, right? We're not, like, surprising anybody. Okay. There was only enough for one day. Miraculously, it worked for 8 days until they were able to get fresh, pure oil. L'shana acheres, the next year, kav va'asom yomim tovim b'halel v'hoda. They established those days as being days of halel and thanks to Hashem. Straightforward? Where does it mention the menorah? Our practice of lighting the menorah.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. It mentions the miracle of the oil. This is not a conversation about the historicity of the miracle with the oil. This is a question of, where did the mitzvah of lighting menorah go? The Gemara is pretending it's not there. I imagine that we have, what, 18 Zoom screens open right now. I imagine that somebody within this 18 has said Al Hanisim at some point and not skipped it in Shmona Esrei and in benching at some point during Hanukkah. We're already on day 4. So somebody who has said Al Hanisim, tell me, does Al Hanisim, with its recounting of the miracle and of the enactments the sages made, does it say anything about lighting the menorah?
No.
There's one line in it about how they lit candles, or they lit neirot, b'chatzros kodshecha, in the yards of your sanctum. That is not talking about lighting menorah. There's a lot of discussion about what it is. And what, you know, was it victory celebration? Was it when they reestablished the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash? But it's very clearly not a mitzvah of Hanukkah candles. So in fact, some later authorities have contended that this is because lighting Hanukkah candles was not part of the original institution of Hanukkah. Rav Yitzchak Yehuda Trunk of Kutna in the 19th century, in his Sefer Chasdei Avos, took that position. He said, lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash at all, post Chashmonaim, when they lit the regular menorah, was partly a celebration of this victory. And after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, then we started lighting our own to commemorate that victory. It's a startling idea if you've never heard this floated before. He argues that that's clear in the Rambam. The Rambam I brought you in source number 14 also gives us the story of Hanukkah. He says, why did the Chachamim of that time enact that they should have these 8 days, starting with the 25th of Kislev, that they should be days of Halil v'Hoda, Yimei Simcha v'Halil, of joy and Halil, and we also light candles, ... So he says the Rambam is framing it as these are days of thanks to Hashem, and by the way, we also light candles, but they're not part of the original, he argues. He even argues that this is in the Ramban. Classic Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Baal Oscha. You know we've been reading on Hanukkah from the Torah. The gifts of the Nesiim. When they dedicate the Mishkan, each day a representative of each Shevet brings a gift. But one Shevet doesn't get to bring a gift. Which Shevet is that?
Levi.
Right. Levi doesn't get to bring a gift. After the Torah has the account of all 12 gifts and the summary at the end of how much they brought, you get to the beginning of Parshas Baal Oscha, and Hashem tells Aaron about lighting the menorah. That section doesn't belong in the Chumash. We already know about lighting the menorah. He's been lighting the menorah since Parshas Tetzaveh. Tetzaveh and Kisisa, we already know that you light a menorah. Aaron knows exactly what he's supposed to do. Why is it here in Baal Oscha? It doesn't belong at all. So says the Medrash, which Ramban quotes, that Hashem said to Aharon, don't feel bad that Shevet Levi is not bringing a gift. Your gift is greater than their gifts. Why? Because their gift is only going to be valid as long as there's a Beis HaMikdash. Their gift is used for the karbanos, for the sacrifices. You have a menorah, and that's going to last forever. Is that Medrash correct? What's the problem with that medrash?
It's a different menorah, and it's Klal Yisrael that's going to be.
Yeah, the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash stops when the karbanos stop. What do you mean the menorah is going to be forever? So Ramban says, "V'hinei davar yadua." It's the third line in the Hebrew, in number 15. "V'hinei davar yadua shekasha'ein Beis HaMikdash kayim v'karbanos betelim v'nei churbano av haneros betelos." He says everybody knows that when the Beis HaMikdash stops and the karbanos stop, so too the candles stop. "Avo lo ramzu elo l'neros chanukas chashmonoi." What they were referring to were the candles of the dedication of the chashmonaim, Shehino Heges Afla Acher Churban Begaluseinu, which happens after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Says Rav Trunk, see that? Chanukah is, lighting Chanukah candles is post Beis HaMikdash. Now, there are ways you could argue with his point. For example, Ramban didn't say it starts after the Beis HaMikdash. He said it's even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam is certainly not valid as a proof. He brings you lighting the menorah as a derabanan explicitly in source number 16. And my big problem with Rav Trunk's idea is, if you really believe that this was an enactment after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, why do we have no record of that enactment? We have records of all the different enactments that, all the ones that we're familiar with, from Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Until then, everybody did lulav only one day outside the Beis HaMikdash. Then they did lulav 7 days, counting the Omer the way that we do, Chadash and Yashan. Like, we have all of these different enactments of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai post-second Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara tells us about them. It says nothing about anybody enacting menorah post-second Beis HaMikdash. Nonetheless, Rabbi Tzalel Zolti, who I think was chief rabbi of Yerushalayim at one point, in his Mishnas Yaivetz, also comes to this conclusion. He brings added sources. For example, take a look at source number 17. This is not his only source, but he brings you the Ravid. The Ravid is talking about whether the correct bracha on the menorah is al hadlakat nerot or lahadlik ner chanukah. And as part of his discussion, he says what you see in the inami in the Hebrew. In the English, it's or because. Mipnei shezo habracha hukba'al hanero shebamikdash shehen shel Torah. Lefichach asa'u kishel Torah. He says because the bracha was enacted as the bracha for the biblical lighting of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, therefore they modeled it on that. So Rabbi Tzalel Zolti says that sounds like he's saying that it's really that we lit the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, and then post that, it ended up being our menorah. So whether you buy this idea or not isn't so relevant for me, isn't such a concern. But what I want to say is this. This is a fourth view about why you would use olive oil. Our first view was you use olive oil because it burns most clearly. Our second view is you use olive oil because that's what the miracle happened with. Our third view is use any oil, just as long as it's an oil lamp, the Maharal. And our fourth view, according to this, is use olive oil because that's what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. Not because of the miracle, but because our Chanukiah is an extension of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. You follow? So those are four different ideas. But now I come back to Rabbi Grossman's question. I think it was your question, Rusemi. Go back to what we said at the start with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, what should I use? What was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's reason? What was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's statement of what I should use to light in source number 2? He said, use olive oil. And Abaye said, why does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi want me to use olive oil? Because it burns nicely. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi doesn't care at all about modeling it on the miracle? Modeling it on the Beis HaMikdash? None of that matters to him? How did that happen? Why doesn't he care about authenticity? You follow?
I don't know if it follows from that.
What do you mean?
Okay. Maybe that's really what he's saying. Maybe he's talking about having that true, clean, integrity light, which is represented by the pure olive oil all the time.
I mean, the metaphor is nice, but would he really not bother to say, we want this to commemorate the nace? I mean, I understand the metaphorical level that you're adding, but there's a literal level too.
Rabbi, why don't we say it's implied? Maybe our quoted Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, it's implied. I mean, the whole idea wasn't found in Akshem, in the Chosoma Shal Kohen Gadol. I mean, why was olive oil being found? The answer is because that's what they used.
So you just think it's a given. But then why does Abaye say that Rabbah went looking for sesame oil? Okay. So Ramosha Feinstein gives an answer, which I have to admit having great difficulty with, but it's an important answer and it's Ramosha. So Ramosha says in source number 18, I'll tell you why. It wasn't just olive oil they used in the Beis HaMikdash. It was pounded oil, the kind that people don't really make these days because they don't need that kind of oil. Because it's hard to find, they said, we're not going to create an enactment to require that kind of olive oil. That kind of olive oil is really hard to get. So therefore, once you're not using pounded olive oil anyway, you don't need to use olive oil at all. You can't really match the Beis HaMikdash with the Shemen Zayis Kassis, pounded oil. So therefore, don't use olive oil anyway. My problem with that is we really have no problem with mitzvos requiring us to get things that aren't commonly available. I have a hard time with the idea that because pounded olive oil is hard to get, therefore we weren't instructed to do it. I feel like if Hashem wanted it, or if the Rabbanan who are enacting it wanted to have us do it, they would have said, "Go find yourself some pounded olive oil or make it yourself." I have a problem with that. But I'll offer you a different answer. We want to use something that commemorates the miracle or commemorates the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't have to be precise in order to do that. Meaning, in terms of commemorating the menorah, right? That's what we call Zecher LaMikdash, wanting to remember the Beis HaMikdash. We have lots of memorials to the Beis HaMikdash in which we are not precise. In source number 19, I brought you the Gemara about counting the Omer. We count the Omer to remember how they count the Omer in the Beis HaMikdash. But in the Beis HaMikdash, they counted days and weeks. And a Maamar in source number 19 said, yeah, I only count days. I count to 49. Why not weeks? Because it's enough to count days to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash. I don't have to count weeks. That's already good enough. In source number 20, I brought you Tosfos in Sukkah, talking about how for the Arba Minim, Lulav Esrog, right? We don't require Hadar, that it should be the utmost of the utmost beauty all 7 days. Just day one. In the Beis HaMikdash, we needed it all 7 days. Yeah, but our memorial doesn't have to be precise. In certain ways, we even avoid mimicking the Beis HaMikdash precisely. You're not supposed to have, we learned this in Maseches Avodah Zarah, you're not supposed to have a standalone seven-branched menorah. But that's an aside. The point is that we can mimic the Beis HaMikdash without being exact in the way we do it, and we can even commemorate the miracle without being exact in the way we do it. Let me ask you a question. What's the difference between a flag and a semaphore? And what's a flag?
To designate something, whether it's a troop or it's an army or it's some sort of a symbol.
Well, they're both symbols or signals. The
It's a
difference.
language almost.
Sorry?
It's a language almost, semaphore.
Right. A semaphore is direct, right? You wave it this way, it means go there. You wave it that way, it means don't go or whatever it is, right? Different. I'm not a semaphorist.
There is a code to it. It's
Yeah.
not, otherwise the enemy would know exactly where you're going also.
Right.
Well, I mean, yes, but on the ship, right, on the tarmac, hopefully it's a clear message to those who are in the know. The semaphore is a clear message. A flag, on the other hand, often just says, we are loyal to this cause. Whatever the cause is represented on the flag. I am loyal to the maple leaf. Right? That's what a flag does. A flag starts a conversation. A semaphore is the conversation. And what I'm getting at is that the menorah is a flag. Right? You want an example of something that is the conversation? I'll tell you reading the Megillah. That's Pirsumei Nisa, which is a conversation. It actually tells you the story. Lighting the menorah doesn't tell you the story. lighting the menorah is a flag. It says, hey, something's going on here. Something happened that related to light. But you're going to have a conversation that's actually going to explain what that is. It's not going to happen otherwise, especially when we talk about how the core mitzvah is just one candle in the entire house. That doesn't tell you what happened at all. That's not the point. It's just a flag. It's not a semaphore. And if so, it's enough that you use oil. It doesn't have to be olive oil. You burn something. That's all you really need. You follow? So I think that that's why Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi doesn't care. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says the essence is that you produce good light. That's really what matters. He said mitzvah and amuf, right? It's really Abaye and Rabbi, I suppose. But even the fact that he's willing to accept the others is already, I think, what I was trying to say there. He's willing to accept the others is already significant. There's more to say on that. But last point here, because it's getting late. We started at 8:15. I applaud everybody who came in later than our regular shiur. I had a 6:30 to 8:15 shiur. So or till 8, whatever. But I brought you two things in sources 23 and 24. I first gave shiur on this a few years back, and then last year, I think it was, that I saw the OU's daily halacha emails, and they included notes about which type of olive oil you use, and also using gelled oil. So in source 23, I'm not going to read out the emails, you have them there on the sheet. But in source 23, they said, we prefer uncooked olive oil, meaning it shouldn't have been heated. They want virgin oil or extra virgin olive oil because that's what was used in the Beis HaMikdash. They're going for that emulation of the miracle as an ideal, or emulation of the menorah as an ideal. The Maharal would say it doesn't matter, but that's what they are going for. Abaye and Rabba would say it doesn't matter. Whatever produces better light. Nonetheless, they want it ideally to match what was in the Beis HaMikdash. And for the same reason, they say, there are halachic authorities who don't like the gelled oil, the one that comes in the cups in a solid form. Because they say also that wouldn't be usable in the Beis HaMikdash. Fortunately, Rav Wozner, the Shevet Halevi, is lenient. And he says, no, you can use that because it liquefies. You light it, it heats up, and then it becomes liquid. So he's good with the use of that. But it's all about this question of just how authentic do we have to be? How closely do we have to match what went on in the Beis HaMikdash? You follow?
I'm just thinking about the whole debate about what the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash looked like.
Right, so that's a whole other discussion.
Right, but if we're authentic,
so how do you know that I don't care about being authentic with that?
I don't know that you don't care.
How many branches did the one in the Beis HaMikdash have?
None.
How many branches does the one we light at home have? So we're not modeling the Chanukiah that closely on it. I can just as easily use the one my kid makes in kindergarten with bottle caps stuck to something that's hopefully not wood. We don't need to model it on what was in the Beis HaMikdash, you know, Chabad notwithstanding. But the debate about what was in the Beis HaMikdash and do you rely on the Arch of Titus is indeed a fascinating question.
Rabbi, you in one of your halakha shiurs, the Beis Neumann.
Yes.
You had said, for example, by Ethan Makpuris, we should be very careful in pronouncing and saying every word because that means has crossed him and now I have Misa.
Well, I didn't quite say that. I quoted the Ramah, right? The Ramah says that it's important to use a sitter, and he says use a sitter when you say Ketaret because you don't want to miss one of the words. After all, we take these very seriously. If you were actually bringing Ketaret, then missing an ingredient would be Chayav Misa. I didn't say if you actually miss a word, Chayav Misa.
No, your point was that one has to try to say every word, such as to emulate what in the Beis HaMikdash. areas where we do try to take it, you know, in its almost in its original form. We don't look at the Birchas Kohanim. We don't look at the Kohanim because I'm visiting Dutch and they have their hands up the Shekhinah was there. So there are other areas where we are concerned about emulation.
Right. So I think your principle is correct, that there are ways in which we are concerned and which ways we're not. I wouldn't take those two examples. Meaning the Ketores one is because of Unishama Farim Sifaseidu. Right? We're supposed to say that when we learned the Torah of the Korbanos, it's like we brought the Korbanos. So do it right. It's not about emulating the Beis HaMikdash, I think. The other example that you brought, which, because I'm just exhausted, has already slipped my mind. Give me a hint. The Birchas Kohanim. So we also have a discussion about why not to look at the Kohanim. It's true, in the Beis HaMikdash, the Shechina is present on their hands, and therefore we don't look. That should not be relevant post-Beis HaMikdash, especially because they cover their hands anyway. But I don't think that the reason was emulation. Maybe it was Zeichel HaMikdash. I take it back. I'd have to go back and take a look. But your general point stands. There are cases where we are very careful to mimic precisely, and then on the other hand, loads of cases like the ones I brought you where we're not so makbid for it. All right, shkoyach everyone. I'm not sure whether there's a shir next Sunday night. I might be traveling on Sunday next week. I might be going to the U.S., so I will be in touch by email, God willing, to let you know. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Yasukar. Thank you, Rabbi.